So today is February 7th. We're learning Sechet Bava Kama at Shari Tefillah on Tuesday night, Chapter 3, Mishnah 8. And we're going to read the Mishnah. Mishnah 8 is Chet. Shnei Shvarim Tamim Shechavlu Ze Et Ze Mishalmim B'motar Chatzi Nezek. So two oxen, Tamim, that damaged each other, ze et ze, you pay, or they pay, b'motar, in the remainder of the difference, right, extra. Motar, like the word notar, right, the extra, the more, in other words, the remainder of the difference, chatzi nezek.
Which difference?
I'm not going to say that much.
Ah.
Just that they each damaged each other. You pay the remainder of the difference, chatzi nezek. We'll have to go back and figure out what it is. Shnehem mu'adim. It's the same case of shnei shvarim that chablu ze beze, but this time it's not tamim, this time it's mu'adim. And the law is when two oxen gore each other and both of them are mu'adim, then mishalmi b'motar nezek shalem. You pay in the remainder of the difference nezek shalem. Echad tam v'chad muad. In other words, when these two oxen damage each other, if one is a tam, one is a muad, then muad b'tam, if it's muad to the tam, mishalem b'motar nezek shalem. You pay in the remainder of the difference nezek shalem. Now what's going on? It's hard to understand. Because if we just said that it's two oxen, a tam and a muad, that damage each other, then what do you mean? The muad b'tam, but it was both of them. It was muad b'tam, it was tam and muad. They both hurt each other. So what are you talking about? What it means is that when two oxen, one a tam and muad, damage each other, muad b'tam means that the muad did more damage than the tam. In the case in which the Mu'ad did more damage than the Tam, they both hurt each other, but one did more than the other did. Then, Mishalem b'motar nezek shalem. You pay in the remainder of the difference, nezek shalem. Whereas Tam b'Mu'ad, if they both hurt each other, but the Tam did more damage to the Mu'ad than the Mu'ad did to the Tam, then, Mishalem b'motar, you pay the remainder of the difference, chatzi nezek.
So Motar is the one who did more.
Right. V'chein shnei anashim shechavlu ze beze, and so two people that hurt each other. Right, it was a fight, and they both damaged each other. This one blackened his eye. This one broke his nose. Mishalim b'motar nezek shalem. You pay the remainder of the difference. Nezek shalem. Now we begin to understand. Each one did damage to the other. That cancels. They cancel each other out, but one did more damage, so the remainder, the more, the guy who did the more, he pays nezek shalem, if it's two people who hurt each other. Look at the next case. Adam b'muad. B'muad b'adam. In other words, a man and an ox that's muad, they both damaged each other. They had a fight. The ox and the man.
The ox won.
I'm not sure the ox won. Adam b'muad means that the Adam did more damage to the muad than the muad did to the Adam. Now there's a heading missing here. It should have said the heading would be that Adam and an ox chablu zebeze, damage each other. Then if the Adam b'muad, if the Adam did more damage, or if the muad b'adam, the muad did more damage.
So the first one is the one who makes more damage?
The first one is the one that does more damage. Meshalem b'motar nezek shalem. Whether the man did more damage or the ox did more damage, since both of them are muadim, right? A man is always muad, and it says that the ox is muad, so then it's simple that always whoever did more pays nezek shalem of the difference.
What if they hurt themselves? What if they...
I punch myself in my nose, you mean?
Well, no. You get into a fight with Jeremy, and in the process, you get hurt more, but it's like you stick yourself in the eye or something, or you fall against...
I was thinking about...
So, I don't know.
Go to his count?
I'm not sure.
Well, it depends. If the fight we're engaged in caused him to injure himself, I think it probably counts as though I injured him.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
The fight itself caused him to injure himself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he was injured in the fight.
And we'll get into a little bit of details there in another few minutes.
But why
does it make any difference who started the fight?
That's we're going to get into. Like, right.
Oh, okay.
But why is it Schneim Ratzim Vezikl Zelzer Schneim Ptuim? And here it's different.
Oh, because there we said that what they were doing with permission. Remember, we said either that running is permitted in Rishut Rabim, or it's not really talking about running, it's talking only about walking. But here, they did things not to do, like punch Jeremy in the nose. That's not normal behavior.
But La'utz is also not.
That was our discussion last week, if you're allowed to run or not allowed to run in Rishut Rabim. Right? Erev Shabbat. Not Shabbat, Erev Shabbat. So then it says, Adam betam, betam ba'adam. This is missing the heading, which would be that a man and an ox got into a fight. And I mean a ox that's a tam. So whether, and the two possibilities are Adam betam, either Adam did more damage than tam did, or the tam ba'adam, the tam did more damage to the man than the man did to the tam. So if it's Adam betam, that the man did more damage, Mishalem b'motar nezek shalem. The man pays the difference, nezek shalem. Tam ba'adam, if the tam, the ox, did more damage to the man than the man did to the tam, Mishalem b'motar chatzi nezek. The tam pays to the man chatzi nezek of the difference.
His purse.
Oh, I just happened to have some extra change up here.
Don't worry, we're going to go back over this. We're just reading it for the first time. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Af tam shechaval ba'adam shalem b'motar nezek shalem. Even in the case of a tam that did damage to a man, meaning that the tam did more damage than the man did to the tam, mishalem b'motar nezek shalem, not chatzi, but nezek, even though it's a tam. We have to ask ourselves, and we will, why the tam pays nezek shalem and not chatzi nezek. Okay, so we just read through this the first time. There's a lot to think about. I want to make sure that we have chumashim, and I neglected to put them out. So here we have a few. Thank you. So of course we're in chapter 21 and 22 of Shmot, Parshat Mishpatim, which is next week's Parsha.
I will keep.
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess David went to get more, but the truth is that there are here. Thank you. So let's just look at the information we have.
Thank you.
In Parshat Mishpatim. So at the end of chapter 21, and there are this page 422 and 423, there are two different instances in the Torah that talk about oxen goring. One is chapter 21, verse 28. That's on page 422 and 423. If an ox shall gore a man or a woman, he shall die, the ox shall surely be stoned. Its flesh may not be eaten, and the owner of the ox shall be innocent. So, there's no payment involved at all. You have to get rid of the ox. But it's not that the carcass goes to the person who died, right? Or to his family. In the case of death, there's no remuneration. I think David talked about this last week, about the concept that when a person dies, there's no kofar in Hebrew. What was the expression?
Yeah, we talked
law?
About the shilumim.
You were saying
also.
The law, you have a
statute. Traditional law, common law was that there's no such thing as what we call wrongful death claim.
Wrongful death.
Doesn't exist. Now we have statutes for it, modern era.
So then 29, but if it was an ox that gores habitually from yesterday and the day before yesterday, its owners had been warned, did not guard and killed a man or a woman, the ox would be stoned and even its owner shall die. When atonement payment shall be assessed against him, pay as redemption for his life whatever shall be assessed against him. But that's not necessarily payment to the family of the deceased. It's payment to the court for his life. Mm-hmm. So in any case...
How do you know that?
I just do.
Okay.
Okay, it's not our subject. You're right, it's an important subject. But the point is that here is a case of an ox goring a man, and the only scenario given is death. It doesn't say a case in which the man was hurt but didn't die. The only case given is when the person dies, and there is no payment made to the person who dies to his family. Not chatzi nezek, case of tam, not nezek shalem in the case of muad. No, there's no payments involved. Then we move to page 424 and 425.
Yeah.
In verse 35 mm-hmm. and 36, we have a different case. If one man's ox shall strike his fellow's ox which dies, they shall sell the living ox and divide its money, and the carcass too shall they divide. That's what we call a tam. Mm-hmm.
Where do you have that? Which verse?
424, page 424, 424.
Mm-hmm.
verse Lamed
Hey. Oh, okay. Thank mm-hmm. you.
But if it becomes known that it was an ox that gored habitually from yesterday and before yesterday, but its owner did not guard it, he shall surely pay an ox in place of the ox, and the carcass shall be his. So here the case of an ox goring an ox is divided between tam and muad, but it only gives us a case in which the ox that's gored dies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My point is the Torah doesn't mention neither a case where an ox gores a man and he lives, nor the case where an ox scores an ox and he lives. Those cases are missing.
It's kind of hard to imagine that an ox can gore somebody and he would live.
Happens all the time in bullfights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, probably goring means injures somehow, don't you think?
Ah, okay.
Just an example of...
Just cause a big gash, and there's doctor bills involved, and there's lots of different payments. The same thing with a man or an ox.
If you go back up to verse 31, it says whether it gores a boy or it gores a girl. Mm-hmm. Then the next verse, if an ox shall gore a slave or a maidservant, 30 mm-hmm. silver shekels shall he give to his master, and the ox shall be stoned. It doesn't say that the servant died. We understand.
Well, it's the same, I think it's the same scenario, right, beginning in verse 28.
Okay.
I think it's just a continuation of
that
scenario.
Yeah.
Changing who it is that's been bored.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we have a lacuna in the law of the Torah, right? We have something missing. Something's missing. And when we go to our Mishnah that we read today, about Shnei Shvarim Tamim Shechablu Zebezeh, right? That expression, Chavlu, seems to include within it the possibility that we're not talking necessarily only about death. Mm-hmm. And that becomes even more clear when we get to the case of a man being involved in the fight with the ox, and it talks about damage money there. Mm-hmm. Certainly we're not talking about death to the man. We're talking about chabalah. In Hebrew, the word chabalah is injury. So what that really means is that this Mishnah is discussing a case that's not mentioned in the Torah, at least not explicitly. Okay, I wanted to put that on the table to begin with. And with that, we can go to the questions I asked. So, question 8, I'm sorry, Mishnah 8, question 1, this is B on the sheet, mm-hmm. immediately gets us to what many of you mentioned just 5 minutes ago. Do you think that the order or the timing of the chablu, I think I made a mistake here, it should be chablu, might make any difference? Does it mean that they did it at the same time?
A one started.
Yeah,
or maybe somebody insulted the one that started it.
Insulted the ox.
With the bulls? Mm-hmm.
They could raise a flag in front of them.
Okay.
The bulls?
A bull raising a flag for another bull?
The owner might. Who, okay. They don't have money.
No,
okay.
About money here.
So anyway, in asking that question, I just wanted to put on the table what you already mentioned. That if one party started the altercation and the other responded, it might be completely different. Here we're talking about a case, and some of the Rishonim say this, that we cannot pin blame more on one than on the other. It's certainly not that the ox started and the man was defending himself. It's not that one ox started and the other ox was defending himself. It's not that. It's two oxen or men oxen that they went out at in a fashion that we cannot say who started or give out blame for this one or for that one.
And similarly, other sources of fault or wrongdoing wouldn't be included, like it was on the property of one of the oxes and somebody trespassed.
Very good point. Right?
That's not so.
Right, we're going to assume this is Rishut Rabim. That's good. Yeah, that's good. So Rishut Rabim. Right. Would the same thing apply in Rishut Yechid? Well, that depends on the machloket we saw. What is the law of an ox that gores in Rishut HaNizak? Right, if the ox goes into my property and gores there, one opinion was it's just like Rishut Rabim. The other opinion was, no, it's always in Rishut HaNizak, it's always Nesek Shalem. Right, we saw a machloket between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Yishmael, I think. Do we assume this Rishut Rabim?
What if, thinking about what Mary Beth said, what if somebody has done something to antagonize or somehow or other
incite,
thank you, this ox, and it's not the person who incites it that gets injured, but, you know, and somebody else's ox that happens to be right close by.
Right, so the answer is I don't know. It would just saying makes sense. I just haven't learned enough to answer that. I don't even know if that's to be discussed in the coming Mishnayot.
But I would also say that if we're dealing with Adam v'Adam...
Adam v'Adam, we're not here. There was no Adam v'Adam.
There's no Adam v'Adam here. It's always Adam
That's going to be different material.
Okay.
Maybe I missed something because I tuned out on what you were saying. V'chein shnei anashim, right? Yeah. So we don't say Adam be'Adam, but it's
goodness gracious, look at that. Jeremy, you said perhaps you tuned out. It looks like me that was tuned out. I read it and didn't see it. Excuse me.
That's why, because it was when we talked about, you know, you and Jeremy getting into it. The question came
But it just
up.
Never said, because says Adam be'Adam, because you don't have to divide it up.
Right.
No,
you say
right.
They're both Nezek Shalom, because they're both Mo'ad.
But with Shnei Adam, you could have, where clearly one person starts it.
That's going to be a different deen. But this is a deen which we cannot apportion blame and say who started.
Okay.
So we simply cancel out the Nezek on each side.
So what is the point of this whole thing? Is just to say that if you're Mu'ad, you bear more responsibility?
Ooh, the question of what's the point of the whole thing, we're planning to get to that in deep mathematical computations. Okay. So the question that I asked, the second question, in what sense does a scenario of Shnei Shvarim Shechavlu Zeh B'Zeh go beyond what we learned in the Torah? So we already pointed out that the Torah only talks about oxen killing human beings or oxen killing the other oxen, but it doesn't talk about chabalah, it doesn't talk about injury. Mm-hmm. So this whole Mishnah goes beyond what it says in the Torah. So the Mishnah is making a certain assumption, right? The Mishnah assumes that there's such a thing as Tam and Mu'ad, not only vis-a-vis killing other oxen or people, but there's such a thing as Chabalah. Now, I really don't know. I guess that means that if one ox gores another ox and doesn't kill it, and a second time and a third time, so we have the fact that it becomes a Mu'ad for Chabalah, right? This Mishnah talks about an ox that's Mu'ad for Chabalah, even though we're not talking about killing another oxen.
You know, it would be easier to imagine it if we think of dogs.
Dogs.
I was thinking that. Because dogs injured don't always kill.
You think the Battle of the Titans, it looks so big. Dogs, you see often dogs kind of get into a clash and then separate.
They do minimal damage. Okay, so the point is that the Chachamim are going beyond the Torah and applying the laws of Tam and Mu'ad even to case of Chabalah and not only to cases of death. And that brings us to the third question. What can we infer from this scenario and ruling concerning what the ruling would be in a simpler case? A simpler case, I mean, not that one ox damaged another and that other one damaged the first one, but just one damaged another.
Oh.
The fact that when one damages another, there's going to be a difference between tam and wad, you might not know that from the Torah. Perhaps you think that tam and wad is only a distinction that applies to death.
Oh.
But from this Mishnah, you learn that it applies not just to death, to injury. So that means if we have an ox that gored another ox and gored another ox and gored another ox, didn't kill it, but just damaged it, and happened the fourth time, the ox that gored is going to pay Nezek Shalem as a muad, even though it never killed another ox, and even this time it didn't kill an ox. And that seems to be a chidush, because the Torah doesn't explicitly talk about that.
That's the point. Okay.
So, and why do you deduce that from this, what we just read?
Because it's clearly talking not about death, but only injury. How do I know that it's talking only about injury?
No, how do we know that the classification process, I mean, if we say this ox today is
what?
Wad, then we're not talking about what happened now, we're talking about what happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't say what happened yesterday.
So you're bringing up the possibility that it became mu'ad only through killing an ox three times? Is that your possibility?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Do they
the possibility.
Become
I don't know that that's...
Yeah.
Can they become mu'ad with chabalah?
That's what David is asking.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, but doesn't the ox... But isn't the ox sold, the surviving ox sold if it kills another? Maybe...
That's if it kills an Adam.
An Adam. Okay.
Well, no, I said if it killed another oxen, then the they were both split.
Right.
And
then
one man's ox shall strike his fellow's ox which dies, they shall sell the living ox and divide its money, and the carcass too shall they divide. So that means that there's no way to become a muad if you kill another ox. If it kills another...
No, the carcass they're dividing is the one that was killed.
The carcass they're dividing is the one that was killed.
The one that was alive.
And it's sold to somebody. It's sold.
So somebody else gets
it's
the trust.
With a tag on its neck that said,
ox, I understand.
I've done it once. And then it gets sold again and says, I've done it twice. And by
we can assume its value goes down every time it's sold.
By the third time, just try to find a buyer.
Yeah.
Could have killed several oxen.
Wait a second, but David brought up an important point that I didn't answer, because the truth is I don't have an answer.
Well, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Common sense says that if there's a penalty for being muad, and the injurer pays more, an ox that injures is muad in the same way that an ox that kills is. I mean...
I agree with that. I agree with that. I think it makes sense. I was just wondering why the rabbi said he learned it from here. I mean, it makes sense.
Okay, so I accept your challenge because I don't have proof. I was just learning that Torah only talks about an ox killing an ox. The Mishnah says the same law applies when an ox injures an ox. And therefore, I made the supposition that I made, but the truth is you could divide. You can say that even though the laws of Tam Wad apply, Chatzi Nezek or Nezek Shalem apply when an ox injures an ox, even then, but to get to the state of Muadut, you have to have killed three times. That kind of hybrid, I didn't imagine that, but you're right, I have no proof that it's not the case. I have no proof that's not the case.
Gored three times.
Gored and killed, David's saying.
And killed?
No, that's what this question is. That's the question. That's another mesh of the question. How do you become? How do you become a muad? Is it only by killing?
Well, if we just think of the ox not necessarily as a living thing capable of being killed, we can think about it in terms of level of damage, death being, of course, the ultimate level of damage.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you're talking, in any case, if an ox damages a pot, it can either break the pot, which we could say is killing the pot, or he could damage the pot. If he damages a pot three times, regardless of the level of damage,
I hear.
Then could we still say he's mu'ad scratched three pots?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he have to have broken those three pots? And I think in that, if you make the ox property rather than thinking of it as something which can die, then you can maybe you can draw a parallel there between how to become.
And what's your conclusion?
Let me ask a question, and then I'll bring it to a conclusion. Uh-huh. Would an ox become muad if this ox went by three different pots and just scratched them, or would he have to break those three pots?
Is he receiving damages for scratching?
Because if he just scrapes three pots and then he becomes muad, then he could scratch three different oxen or the same oxen three times and become muad. In that way.
I don't know anything.
You just draw the parallel either way.
I don't know anything.
Right?
Mm. I'm not clear about your way of logic.
So we're talking about if you can become Muad, if you have to kill three times, or if you just have to damage three times.
If we
take death out of the equation, if we just say there's property, whether it's oxen or whether it's a pot or a plate or a barrel,
or
whatever,
a slave.
Or a slave for that matter, although it's kind of a version of the thought like that, but then you just talk then about levels of damage. It can either be minimally damaged or it can be ultimately damaged. It's a spectrum, whether it's broken or killed or whatever, but that's the ultimate level of damage. Then does that ox have to inflict the ultimate level of damage three times to become muad? Or does it only have to inflict just that minimal amount of damage three times to become muad? And if we can figure that out, then we can figure... Again, if that ox has to have killed three oxen, or if it just needs to have injured three oxen.
But how do you figure that out?
No.
Jeremy doesn't have an answer to that.
I was asking Rosh Lissinger here if he knew that. If scratching the pots three times is enough.
If the ox scratches your pot, do you want some money for that?
But is that enough to become muad? Of course I want money for that.
Okay, so we're now... We're treading water. We don't know. So we'll try and think about that. Perhaps I'll look it up. I just didn't give it enough thought. Let's go on. Okay, let's go on.
But before we go on, we never discussed killing back in Mishnah 1:4.
Where
we first looked at this. We don't need to go look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we go back, we never discussed the need to kill. It was all just goring. Mm-hmm. It was all just damaging. So I don't think we can have this sophisticated argument out of context.
No, that kind of ties in with what Jeremy's saying.
That's a good point.
We're
in other words,
about jars and
this is
planks.
The jars aren't broken; they're just damaged to whatever degree.
One is dinei nefeshot, and one is
rechush.
It's two different things.
No, it's not dinei nefeshot because it's killing an animal.
But
it's property.
Also with people.
Let's put people aside. So it could. It looks like. Whether an ox kills another ox or damages another ox, it's not categorically different. It's just quantitatively different. It's not qualitatively different.
Right?
Right. And indeed, like Jim points out, goring includes kicking and lying down on something. An ox could be muad for kicking. That's a category of Karen.
Can it be muad for kicking?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. An animal is muad to walk normally and break utensils that are in its path.
Right.
No, that's regular. That's regular. An animal breaks things by walking, but that's not kicking. That's not aggressive.
So
we're talking about aggressive damage now.
And
that's only in Rishut Yechid. In Rishut Rabim, a regal is... Pator.
Can you become for biting or kicking muad?
Yes.
But what about just within the context of the Mishnah itself? V'chein shnei anashim she'chav lozeh b'zeh. We're talking about two men that killed each other, or two men that hurt each other. So then why should we say in all other... Oh, because we're talking about how they become muad, not whether they...
Right. So we're talking how they become muad. So I'm going to go back to my original assumption that David challenged me on now. It's a good discussion. But it does seem that since an ox can become mu'ad for kicking three times, then I guess it would become mu'ad for goring without killing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just the act of goring. And whether it kills or doesn't kill, that's a quantitative and not a qualitative difference because we're talking about property, not talking about human beings.
So it's an aggressive behavior.
An aggressive behavior. Aggressive. Right.
Unexpected behavior.
Unexpected aggressive behavior.
Is the owner, I like to think of it as frisky.
Okay. So that was a good discussion.
Frisky is a
in this Mishnah, which is really pretty straightforward, we're going to now move to the very end of the Mishnah, to Rabbi Akiva. Let's try and understand Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Akiva, at the very end of the Mishnah, so the last 10 or so words, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Af tam shechaval ba'adam, even at ax that's a tam, has no record of goring or hurting, shechaval ba'adam, suddenly went up to a guy and did some damage, but didn't kill the person, mishalim b'motar nezek shalim, which means that if the man hurt the ox and the ox hurt the man, if the ox did more damage than the man did, then the ox has to pay the difference between the damages and has to pay nezek shalem, even though the tam is a tam, the ox is a tam. So why does it have to pay nezek shalem if it's a tam?
No, but this is not so. It's tam shechaval ba'adam, but not adam shechaval ba'tam. It's not a mutual chabala.
The reason I say it's mutual is because it uses the word mutar. Mutar.
Ah, the
difference.
Okay.
But you're right, that all the more so, if the man didn't do anything, just got gored by the ox that's a tam, still the law, according to Rabbi Akiva, is going to be nezek shalem and not hatzi nezek. How could that be? Doesn't that contradict the Torah? That's a trick question. Doesn't that contradict the Torah?
We didn't have anything about injury in the
right.
Torah.
Right, the answer doesn't contradict the Torah.
No.
No, that's right.
That's the point I began with. This whole subject of the Mishnah is not discussed in the Torah, apparently. So Rabbi Akiva is going to say that the discussion in the Torah that talks about oxen goring people is only about death.
Yes.
And there you have the distinction between Tam and Muad. Oh, wait a second. Did I say that properly? Did I say that properly?
Say it again.
Mm-hmm.
There you have the distinction.
No. I didn't say it properly. In the Torah, there are two different discussions, right? One is an ox that kills people. Mm-hmm. The other is an ox that kills oxen.
An ox.
Mm-hmm. Our case of an ox that hurts people is not mentioned anywhere. It falls between the cracks.
Right.
And Rabbi Akiva seems to hold that an ox that causes damage to people but doesn't kill, it doesn't matter if it's a tam or muad. For that you have to pay nezek shalem. And why? Why? Because there's never going to be chatzi nezek when we're talking about a human being being hurt. The whole thing of chatzi nezek was about damage to property. When oxen damage property, there we divide between nezek shalem and chatzi nezek. But when a man gets hurt, all that is out the window. This is not property. This is damage to body, and the laws are completely different. And the Torah didn't mention this, and apparently Rabbi Akiva would say the Torah didn't have to mention it. It's clear that if my property damages your body, I have to pay.
So would that mean that in where it says, likewise, if two men wounded one another, they pay the full excess, the first reading would be that they pay the excess because they're always liable for their actions.
Right.
On the converse, you're saying that if man is hurt, you always pay the excess. Where am I going with that?
If a man is hurt,
I'm not sure.
Forget about excess. If a man is hurt,
you have to pay full.
If a man is hurt, you pay full. The whole matter
if
of chatzi nezek.
If a man hurts man, you always pay full.
Right, always. And says Rabbi Akiva, even if an ox hurts a man,
you
always
issue
pay full
is
damage.
That if a person is hurt, then it's nezek shalem.
Person's always more than an animal.
Unless it's a person than a person.
Because you can't determine. How would you even determine relative amounts of damage?
No.
We're talking about valuation of the damage. You value things.
Yeah. This is not about technical question of we can't figure out how much it's worth. It's about a principle here. Mm-hmm. You keep a principle.
And we're assuming we can figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. And the rabbis have methods of figuring out. That's a technical question. So
but
Kiva,
human life, it would be valued above.
Right. It's not a life. We're not talking about life.
It's not a life. It's only damage.
Yeah.
A human being, though,
but it's all
is
the things.
Valued. So a human being is just a different category than any kind of property.
We have all these problems when somebody gets injured in a car accident. Mm-hmm. We have a way to calculate. We guess at it. That's what we do.
David,
how much were the medical bills? How much did he?
I understand that, but what this is saying, though, is that when you're dealing with human injury, this is in a whole different category than when you're dealing with property damage.
Rabbi Akiva says that.
Right.
Right.
That would make sense if we were dealing something other than actual damages. You know, because on the thing about a bull damaging a bull, and it says that if one bull, you know, there's an example in here that if one bull is damaged to the extent of 100 and the other is damaged to the extent of 80, then the difference of 10. I want to get to that calculation because I don't understand.
I'm about
that
to get
word.
To it. I'm about
that
to get to it.
Is weird. The English doesn't work.
The difference is 20.
Okay, so let's leave that for a second. We'll get to that.
But yeah. That works if you're talking in that context. It feels like, help me out. It's been too long since law school. Not actual damages, but the reduction in the actual value. Well, not the medical bills. But the reduction, the actual value of the cow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dealing with a human, it seems like that doesn't apply. You know, because you really are getting.
Well, we just think about the damages in a different way
for
people. That's all. Mm-hmm. But they're actual damages. So with a cow, you would say it's used to be worth 100, and now it's only worth 40. The damage is 60.
And
you don't say how much did it hurt, what were the medical bills, you say how much is it worth now. Whereas a person, we have a different way. We have the five things that we calculate of the loss of wages and we have ways of calculating it. But it's
just to give an example of things we'll get to in the future. If someone poked out my eye, or an ox poked out my eye, so on a basic level of nezik damage, the Mishnah will say, we figure out how much I would be worth on the slave market with an eye and how much I'm worth without an eye.
Okay, got it.
Simple. So now let's get to the only difficult point in this Mishnah is one that we didn't touch on, that's the mathematics. So I'm going to put something on the board here.
And before you do that, focus on the b'motar.
Yes, that's exactly...
What
exactly
does
that mean?
Word, break it before we do the, or as we do the math.
Break it down.
Yeah.
So the word motar
means more.
Motar adamina be'ma'ayin.
Think of the word yoter.
Ah, yes. Okay.
More. Mm-hmm. Or yeter, which means remainder. Motar is the same word. It means more.
More.
Okay. The more. But now, let's think of these cases of tam b'mu'ad and mu'ad b'tam, two oxen, not according to Rabbi Akiva, according to the Tanakhama, and they each damage each other. So I'm just going to put an example of a case. Let's take a mu'ad and a tam that damage each other, and the mu'ad does 100 units of damage to the tam. Mm-hmm. And the tam does 40 units of damage to the mu'at.
Yeah, because it's less practiced.
And then we can think of a different case that would be a tam that does 100 units of damage to the mu'at, and the mu'at does 40 units of damage to the tam.
Okay.
How are we going to work this out? So you might say, in the first case, the difference between them is 60. That's mm-hmm. how much damage was done. And since the Mu'ad is the one that's paying, the Mu'ad has to pay Nezek Shalim.
Right.
Has to pay
60.
That seems to make a lot of sense. And using the same logic, in this case here, the Tam did 100 units of damage and the Mu'ad did 40 units of damage. The difference between them is 60. How much did Tam have to pay?
30.
So it's
going
to pay 30. Fine, and that seems to make a good deal of sense. Except for the fact that we really have to go back and think about it again. Why? Because in this case, that the Tam did 100 of damage and the Mu'ad did 40, so we said that the difference is 60, the Tam pays half.
30.
Mm-hmm. But we could have perhaps thought about it differently.
How?
The Tam
plays 10.
Did 100 of damage, but it's only calculated as 50, because he only pays half.
Ah.
So this is 50.
And 40 is 10.
40, the difference is 10.
Whoa.
And in the same sense...
So then he pays
in the same
five.
Sense... No, no, we already did the half. We said...
Ah, we have to...
Half of 100 is 50.
The question is, what do you have?
But we talk about...
Wouldn't that be cuts in
Nezek? Wait a second.
So what does the top one pay?
Then let's think about this top case.
Okay.
In the top case, the Tom did 40 of damage, but it's really only 20, because the Tom is responsible only for half. So it's 20 as opposed to 100. The difference is 80. So the question is, when you have a Mu'ad doing more damage to the Tam than the Tam did the Mu'ad in this particular case, is it that the Mu'ad pays 60 or 80? And in this particular case, when the Tam did more damage than the Mu'ad, what is it really? Does the Tam pay 30 or does the Tam pay only 10?
No, it's the first one, because we talk about the Mutar.
Okay, very good. So we can examine this question now from two perspectives. From the textual perspective and from the conceptual perspective. If we examine it textually, we'll come to one conclusion. If we examine it conceptually, we'll come to a different conclusion, I think. So Ilana says, look at the text. What does the text say? The text is clear. The text says that you take the difference, and then you ask, do you pay the whole difference or half of it? In other words, the text seems to say this one.
60 right? or 30.
This is the text, what the text seems to say.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
However, conceptually, it makes no sense. It's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Because why is it not fair? Because let's take this case at the bottom here. To say that the Tam pays 30... he's paying more than he really deserves to pay. Tom only has to pay half. Now, how much Nezek did the Tom do? The Tom did 100 of Nezek. That's what he did. But he's only responsible for half of it. Half of it is 50. So he gives 50, but the other guy has to give 40 back. So there's only 10 left. It conceptually, that this Tom should only pay 10. So conceptually... And this is textually. The same thing up here. Textually, it says you take the difference and the Mu'ad pays it. But it's not fair. It's not fair because the Tam ends up in this case having paid for all of his damage. Right? If the Mu'ad only pays 60, then the Tam is suffering for 40 of damage. But that's not fair. Tam only has to pay for half. So conceptually, it really should be that the Mu'ad gives the owner of the Tam 80. Conceptually. And if he gets 80, then he's only paying for half of his damage. So we have a problem. Either we figure out a rationale for what the text seems to say, or we coerce the text into... saying something that it doesn't say.
Well, the question, I think, that's not clear in the text
is
the word motel.
Is what is it that you have and then pay? Do you have the damage of the one who did the most damage? Do you have that first, or do you take the difference and do it half? And so it's chatzi nezik of
what? But the text seems to say
to imply.
It doesn't imply. It says motel.
Yeah. That's right.
No,
yeah.
I can still read the same text and come up with the same.
How?
Show I've me. Got one that does more damage,
but it says motel. You cannot avoid this word.
Yeah,
but the word seems to say that you compare the damages. Pay. The damages. You compare the damages. Mm-hmm. Get to a certain figure of the difference, and then you take either half of that or all of it. So it's really hard. It's problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'll agree.
So we'll either have to find the rationale for what the text says. We'll have to coerce the text to say something else. So I
come from literature. To me, a word is a word.
Uh-huh. But if it doesn't make sense, we're in trouble. We can't find a rationale for it.
Yeah. Right.
So I brought here some commentators that they will explain to us their approach.
Oh, good.
We're reading in the Rambam. C1. Mishneh Torah LeRambam Hilchot Niskei Mamon Perek Tet Halacha Yudalet. We'll just read the whole Rambam. Shnei Shvarim, two oxen, Tamim, Shechablu Ze Bezeh, damaged each other, Mishalim B'motar Chatzi Nezek. It's more or less the language of the Mishnah. Shnehem Muadim, right? If both of them were Muadim, Muad v'adam, if it was a man and a muad, shechablu ze beze, mishalmim b'motar, nezek shalem. These are all the easy cases.
Yeah.
The Rambam just takes the mission and organizes it, quote-unquote, better.
Mm-hmm.
Echad tam, v'chad muad. Ah, this is the interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the heading is echad tam v'chad muad. Two oxen of different types. Then the Rambam says muad b'tam, meaning the muad did more damage than the tam.
Mm-hmm.
Mishalem b'motar nezek shalem.
That's word by word.
It's word for word. It's not going to help us understand the Mishnah.
No. Mm-hmm.
Tam b'muad, meaning that the tam did more damage than the muad. Mishalem b'motar chatzi nezek.
Again,
the same language of the Mishnah. It's really not that helpful. But then the Rambam says, ketzad, how so? He's going to give us monetary examples. Shur tam Shehifsid b'shur tam aher shave me'ah. Translation: a shur tam that caused a loss, hifsid b'shur tam to another shur tam aher, a different one, shave me'ah, with the worth of 100, caused 100 loss.
Mm-hmm.
Our example. Yeah.
Just happens to be, I took the figures from the Rambam. V'chazar z'acharon, and returned this one, the last one. V'fsid b'rishon sheve arba'im, and caused a loss to the first for a value of 40. By the way, the Rambam doesn't mean to imply a chronological progression. This, then, that. It just means to divide it up, but it doesn't mean it happened different times.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Harei bal harishon mishalem lebal acharon. Behold, the owner of the first pays to the owner of the second 30. That is a rather right.
But no, both of them are tamim.
Both of them are tamim. So that's not really a problematic or interesting case for us.
But it's exactly like the text. Half of the motel.
Okay, but let's wait for him to get to the complicated case. Hayushnehem muadim, were both of them muadim? Baal Rishon mishalem shishim. So the owner of the one that did more damage pays shishim. But now he gets
meaning
the
shishim
60. Yeah.
You translate 60.
Is 60. That what you're saying? 60. Oh, mm-hmm. I didn't translate. I'm sorry.
Oh.
60. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear it either.
Now comes the important part. We went through the whole halacha and the Rambam just what we are getting to now. Harishon muad v'acharon tam. The first one is a muad and the last one is a tam. That's the case on the board.
The top one, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The muad 100, yes, the tam 40. Baal harishon mishalem shmonim.
It's 80.
Oh, 80. That's the conceptually.
80.
Mm-hmm.
Shmonim, 80. Harishon tam, the first is a tam, v'acharon muad, that's the second case on the board.
You will say 10.
Right? Baal harishon mishalem asara.
Asara.
You're the first,
yeah.
Pays 10.
Oh,
so yeah, the Rambam favors logic over the simple
text.
Meaning of the text.
Mm-hmm.
It fits the Rambam.
And who even knows, it's hard to know, if the Rambam realizes that he's forcing the text. It's just so obvious to him, and there's no need for any explanation. It can't be otherwise. So that's the Rambam. The Rambam holds the conceptual approach that a tam is only responsible for half of the damage it does. Whatever the Mishnah says, it can't be otherwise.
Well, but we've got the Gemara and we've got other commentators before we get to Rambam.
So I really didn't look up if there's any machloket on this subject before the Rambam. But after the Rambam, there's certainly machloket.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting to the Rosh, which I have at the bottom of the sheet. But the Rosh is based on Rashi and the Tosfot, so we're going to read Rashi and the Tosfot.
Who is the Rosh?
The Rosh is Rabbeinu Asher.
That's the grandson of Rashi?
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. The Rosh...
It's Rashbam.
...is Rabbeinu Asher.
And when did he live?
He's just a guy.
Do I remember when he lived? I'm sorry, I don't remember. He lives a little bit after Rashi, but I don't remember exactly when.
Ah, okay.
I don't remember. So Rashi on our Mishnah says as follows... On the opening phrase, bimotar, right, the difference, the more of the difference, it means to estimate.
Shuma.
Right, shuma. Shamin, mashi ziku, shelze, yoter, al nizakav, shelze.
Like the text.
Right, like the text. It says, we estimate that which damaged of this more than the damages of this. Ubotomotar, and in that very difference, Mishalem, Mishahizik Yoter Tahatsi. And in that very difference, he pays the person or the one that damaged more Etahatsi. The half. He seems to say, like the text says, first you figure out the difference, and then you pay half of it if the case is tam. And then he says on the Dibur Matril, the next one, the opening phrase, Muad Betam Shalem B'Mutar. Right? If it's a Muad Betam, if it's a Muad that does more damage to the Tam than vice versa, then you Mishalem in the Mutar, Nezek Shalem. And he goes on to say, Klomar, Imhu Hizik et Atam Yoter Mishahiziko Tam. That is to say, if he damaged the Tam more than the Tam damaged him. So this is the muad has to pay whole of the difference. The Rashi seems to be pretty, not really adding to our subject, just saying what the Mishnah says.
Okay.
Now look at the Tosfot. Tosfot says, Shnei shvarim tamim shechablu ze beze. Two oxen that are tam, that damage this to that, etc. He says, Tema. I am amazed. Dekula matnitin she'ein tzrichahi. That the whole Mishnah, there's no need for it. He says, look at the whole Mishnah. It's all logic. It doesn't add anything to what we already knew. With this whole Mishnah. What do you really learn from it? Someone asked me that earlier. Right? Someone said at the very beginning.
Very best.
What's the big deal about this Mishnah? It's all fleshing out of obvious principles. Except for the issue we're dealing with on the board.
Right.
Right. Yes.
Which way do you calculate?
Okay.
So we're going to read now the Rosh. And the Rosh says something fascinating. He says, look, he basically says like this. if you read like the Rambam, the Mishnah is superfluous. Because it's all fleshing out, logically, of things we already knew. Therefore, he says, the Mishnah must have meant something else. You hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He's going to say the following. What the Tosfot says, the Mishnah is superfluous, that's only if you read it like the Rambam. Oh. Then it really says obvious things.
Conceptually?
We ourselves.
Yeah.
The way that logic would dictate?
Yeah, if logic would dictate, why do you have to write in the Mishnah? If the Mishnah only means to flesh out logic,
that's right.
Then why write it?
You're combining two different cases into one. You're saying the case of where a Tom injured another animal and the case where the Moad injured another animal, and you put them together.
Yeah, and there's no.
And so it seems like you take one and you take the other.
Yeah. So the conclusion is we should pay attention to the text.
Right. So the Rosh says, therefore, it must be that the conceptual approach is not correct. Because if it was correct, the Mishnah wouldn't have to say it.
It's not fair, then. It's not fair.
So I have to explain why it's fair. But the Rosh is going to say it must mean what the text actually says. And that's the whole chidush of the Mishnah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That it's really not like you would have thought.
Very smart.
Which means that the Tam is being penalized more than normal. Normally, Tam only is responsible for half its damage. But according to the text, the Tam is responsible for more than half its damage.
And I'll tell you where it's logical. Because somehow he got into a fight.
Exactly.
So he's not such a big Tam.
Right.
That's right.
That's what the Rosh is going to say.
Yeah.
That the category of Tam applies when the ox just does it. But here, he got into a fight.
That's right.
It's a whole different can of worms.
If the Tom had not, if all the damage had been one sided, the Muad against the Tom, and the Muad suffered no damage itself, and it was all Muad against Tom, well, then you know. Tom's really innocent.
Then we knew who I took.
But the Tom's not quite so innocent, because the Tom's
not quite innocent.
Yeah. Fought back.
But he still didn't pay as much as the Moab.
He didn't fight back because we didn't know who started.
Still didn't pay as much. But he pays more. We calculated, he pays more than he would have paid had it just been him
injuring the other.
Right.
Right.
I like that.
So we'll just read it in the Rosh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here we go in the Rosh. The Rosh, by the way, if you're interested, is traditionally printed in the back of each volume of the Shas.
In the back?
In the back.
Not with the text.
Not with the text, and not in a separate book. They used to print... Well, I'll tell you that in traditional volumes of the Shas printed in the past 30 years... Every volume has the pages that have in it, Rashi and Tosfot and a few other commentators. And at the back, you have the Rif, Rabbeinu
Alfasi.
The Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And around the Rif are the commentators on the Rif. And then you also have the Rosh at the back and the commentators on the Rosh. But you remember in Yeshiva, this goes back 30 years ago, we had some old volumes that had the Rif and the Rosh alone without the Talmud. I haven't seen them printed since then. So today you have...
Rosh and the Rif. Shasas, it was at the end?
It's at the end. Yeah. The Art Scroll probably doesn't have the Rosh at the end, probably.
No.
I don't think so.
There's nothing.
I don't recall it.
There's nothing at the end.
So let's see what the Rosh says. Rabbeinu Asher.
Before you go on, you're saying... that Tosfot says that we use the textual literal interpretation and
not Tosfot but the Rosh.
The last long paragraph.
Yeah. I just brought the Tosfot as a kind of foil here, who says this Mishnah doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but then I thought you said it doesn't say anything.
Yes, I said that, but
it
not the name of Tosfot.
It doesn't say anything if you say that it's the logical, conceptual approach that carries forth. Because then why do you need the Mishnah?
Because here in the Art Scroll, they use quotes from Yom Tov to support yeah. the
So Tosfot Yom Tov is not Tosfot.
Ah. Okay.
Tosfot are the Balei HaTosfot,
got it.
The grandsons and students of the grandsons of Rashi. So we're back in Sarfat, in northern France, in Ashkenaz, in the 12th and 13th centuries. Tosfot Yom Tov is...
Yom Tov Lifman.
Right.
Right.
Heller. Who's in the 18th century, if I'm not mistaken, and he's a commentator, not on the Gemara, but on the Mishnah, in separate right. volumes of Mishnah.
So before we go on, the authoritative answer is what? Conceptually or textually?
What do you mean authoritative?
What is the authority?
The majority opinion.
You are among the Jews.
It's a okay, bucket. This is one where there's not.
No, I don't know. But the art school says, I don't know. I know the Rambam says one thing, and the Rosh has a different approach.
Okay.
I don't
That's
remember
fair.
Who
That's
we asking like. Yeah, you open up the Shulchan Aruch and look.
It's not the Talmud.
That's fair. Okay.
So the Rosh says, Shnei Shvarim Tamim Shechablu Zebeze. Two Shvarim that are Tamim that damage this at that. Pirshu B'Tosfot. They explained in Tosfot. Dekula Mishnah. Kedei Nakta.
What is Nakta?
Which means that the whole Mishnah, for nothing it's written, De'ein Bashum Chidush, that there isn't in it any innovation. But Tosfot says, and the Rosh is simply saying what we read in Tosfot in different language, that for nothing it's written, that there's no Chidush. Now Tosfot himself goes on and finds a Chidush in something else, but we're not getting into that. But as far as the body of the Mishnah we have in front of us, the Tosfot points out that it doesn't seem to say anything. And that's brought by the Rosh. And then the Rosh says, Umitoch Rashi, Nireli, it appears to me, Shirotzeloma, that he wants to say, Sheyesh Chidush Gadol B'Mishnah. Translation, that out of or within Rashi, it appears to me that he wants to say that there is a very big chidush in this Mishnah, in the fifth word of the second line. Mm-hmm. And this is his language. He's quoting Rashi to prove that Rashi has a different interpretation of the Mishnah than the conceptual interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Rashi seems to read the Mishnah just like it says.
So now he's going to tell us what Rashi thinks?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's quoting Rashi now. Bimotar, that's the first word in Rashi. We read this exactly 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Shamin, we estimate Mashi Ziku Ze Shelze. You tear Minis Ko Shelze. We estimate what damaged this one more than what it damaged the other one. Oboto Motar, and in that very difference, that very moreness. Shizik, Yuter, that it damaged more. Mishalem hachatzi.
Exactly.
It pays the half of the difference. That's what Rashi says, and that's really the pshat of the Mishnah. But it's not what the Rambam said.
Right.
The Rambam never said you pay half of the difference. The Rambam said you do the half before you get to the difference. Right? You get to do the halving before you get to the difference. But the Mishnah and Rashi seem to say differently. And then he continues quoting Rashi. It's the third line, the second word. Muad betam, if the muad damaged the tam more. Mishalem motar, it pays the motar. Klomar, that is to say, still quoting Rashi. Im hui zik et the tam yotir mishiziko tam, if the muad damaged the tam more than the tam damaged it. So that's the end of his quote of Rashi. Then he says, Uma shehutzrak lifaresh muad betam v'chule, and that it was necessary to explain muad betam, etc. Kvar piresh lano pewasho shel mutar. He already explained to us his explanation of mutar. Why did Rashi say it twice? He already explained once. It's so easy to understand. Ella, rather dikdik bilishuno, rather he was exacting in his language. He's pointing out that Rashi emphasized, because there is something to emphasize, because what Rashi is explaining actually is not the logical approach.
Mm-hmm.
Ela digdek belishano. He's exact in his language. Im huizik bo yoter, mishehiziko atam. If he damaged the other more than the tam damaged him. Lomar lecha, to say to you, shatam mishalem nezek shalem benigichazo. To tell you that the tam pays nezek shalem in this nigicha. In other words, in the looking at the textual thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The tam is ending up paying nezek shalem. Because, then, again, how do I do it? If we take the difference between 140, and that's 60.
Uh-huh.
No, I should go down here, sorry. If we take the difference...
Mm-hmm.
No, either way, I'm 60, sorry, either way.
60.
If we take the difference between 140 and that's 60, we're making the tam responsible for all of his damage.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that's what Rashi was trying to emphasize by pointing out to us twice what the Mishnah says, that it's a big chidush. It's an unbelievable chidush. The tam ends up paying for all of its damage.
And he knew the Rambam will make trouble, so he made it clear.
Okay.
Chazal ba'atid.
It's a little wordy, but we'll read on. This is the fifth line, the third word. Kagon im chaval mu'ad betam hamishim. For example, if damage the mu'ad to the tam hamishim, and he's of course using different examples than the Rambam did.
Yeah.
So we're saying that the mu'ad did damage, let's say, a 50.
Uh-huh.
V'tam b'mu'ad arba'im, and the tam did it to mu'ad
40.
It's the same 40, right? Hadin noten, logic would say, din noten, logic would say, yishalem mu'ad b'tam shloshim. You would say that the mu'ad has to pay 30. Why 30? We'd say the tam's only responsible for half of this, which is 20. Difference between 20 and 50 is 30. That's what you would say. But the Rosh says, no, that's not the halakha. If we read the Mishnah, that's not what it says. It says, first take the difference, and then make half.
Does it mean it's 50?
Five.
Sure.
Say it again?
Take the difference and pay all.
And pay all, right, and pay all.
Because
it's 100 minus 50, it's 100% minus 50%.
Yeah, so it's 50 so it's minus half of 40.
40 and a half.
In other words, that would be the logical way to do it.
Same that's the Rambam way.
Rambam
way,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kamash Malan, the last words of the line, it lets us hear. Now, the real halakha is, even though it doesn't seem to be logical, She'ein l'shalem ela asara. You don't pay anything but 10. Just take the difference.
Right.
Anything but 10, which means that Tam ends up being responsible for all of his damage and not just for half. But that's what the Mishnah says. And that's a big chidush. Dehainu yoter al mashi ziko Tam. That is to say, the mu'ad has to pay the difference between what it damaged and the other one damaged. Visparato, and its logic is, mishum shitchilo ke'ehat, because they both began together.
That's it.
They both got into a fight.
They got into
They're both monsering. It's just a legal definition.
Okay, so you know what? We understand, it's just more words here, but it's the same thing to go on. And then look at the last line in the middle. The last line, the second to last line, in the middle, there is a period there.
Mm-hmm.
Right after the period.
Vatosfot,
it's abbreviated Tosfot. Vatosfot lo hiskimu al zeh. But the Tosfot don't agree with this.
Okay.
And since Tosfot says there's no chidush in the Mishnah, he must be reading it like Rambam. That it's all logical. So the Tosfot is reading it here 80 and 10. Okay. But the Rosh says, no, I'm reading it 60 and 30. And then I understand why the Mishnah is written. It's a big chidush. I read again the Tosfot. But Tosfot, lo iskimu al zeh. Kivan shepirshu the Mishnah in Srechahi. Because they explained that the Mishnah is unnecessary, so we see how they're learning it, but I am saying differently, he says. Okay, that's the story.
That so brings the Rabbi Akiva here.
But that's a whole other story. I just put it because it's the end there. But that's the story. So it
you
is.
You never know how much. I mean, there's an assumption about what the author understood.
Which author?
Of the Mishnah.
The Rosh
assumes that the author of the Mishnah understood the distributive principle of multiplication. You know, that you multiply before or after you subtract.
It's not such high mathematics.
Not to people that have algebra and learned it in, but that kind of understanding was not common.
Mathematics was known at that period already very well.
Well, you're assuming that, but I guess I would note
this
that
is after Pythagoras, that's after a lot of great mathematicians.
Well, no, not every Amar, it's new Pythagoras.
But I would just note that there's it doesn't explain this idea of the chidush doesn't explain a lot that is in the Mishnah. In other words, if that were all the Mishnah wanted to say, then it's, but why does it start with to Tom, to Moad? Those aren't part of that.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That was a good question.
Because it seems to me like really what, if we're talking about what the point of it is, it's the same point like you say in a trial that you can't introduce evidence about a person's past. You really, you know, you just consider what's in front of you. You consider the fight that happened and the damages that were done there, and whether they're Moad or Tom is
but
not
these are
so
bulls.
Important.
No, wait, but
that's not that. No one's saying that you can't take into account their history, and
well,
I don't think our law says that
right?
either.
Are we saying that the Tom is partly
sometimes
to blame.
Criminals.
I'm not. It's not completely irrelevant that it's Tom versus Moad, but it's not as relevant as we thought.
That's but okay. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that it's there's more.
Okay, so you're objecting to the Rosh's understanding, and I understand.
Rosh seemed to understand what the others were saying.
Say it again, please.
He clearly understands. He does understand.
Yeah.
It's explicit. That's clear.
Yeah.
But I guess I just want to say most of the disputes that I've seen in my life have to do with just people misunderstand what somebody else said.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just try and be more explicit and say it back again, and he did that. He was very clear. But the Mishnah is not clear on this point.
It's not clear, but the Rambam is clear also. The Rambam is clear. He gives the numbers.
Yes. It's not clear that he understood there was another choice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not clear that he understood there was another choice.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect the Rambam did, and that's why he gave these numbers, so we wouldn't have a doubt.
I could be.
He knew how to read plain text.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the old thing that sometimes people have conflicts because they communicate all too well.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do.
I'm willing
but there
to
are a lot of misunderstandings
question.
In the world.
There are.
Was the Rambam aware that there was another possible understanding? The truth is, even after this class, the Rambam might say there is no other understanding. What they were saying is simply illogical. It can't be. This can't be.
But the Rambam knew
so
what
having Natalia's said that. The more interesting question that I'd like to know, and is there a source for finding, was the issue settled?
Oh, yes, there is a source. It could be that the end of the Art School commentary there, it tells you. I don't know. I didn't look.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't tell you, then you go to the Shulchan Aruch, and you see if there's a clear psak. Now, it could be the Shulchan Aruch comes down in favor of the Rambam, but then the commentators in the Shulchan Aruch object. I didn't look it up.
But you see, the issue is the process.
I'll call back in 1 minute.
Now, well, maybe, but at the end of the day, it's the, I mean, it's the, we're talking about laws here.
Right, so.
And so at the end of the day, it's more interesting to know how it was resolved and work backwards to the process of how you got there.
Wow. So I'll tell you.
It's more interesting to know what the real rule is.
This is really a difference of opinion in the methodology and the purpose of study. What you're saying is, number one, the way it's often learned in Sephardi Yeshivot, that the learning is lasuke shmata taliba de hilchata, in order to learn in order to get to the halakha, and the halakha you always have in mind. That's also the way it's learned in a kolel that focuses on dayanut. So these, on this law, is they're trying to get to the halakha. But in traditional Ashkenazi yeshivot, the conclusion of the halakha is utterly irrelevant.
That's
and
right.
You can study it's this for 2 weeks and no one will even ask the question what the halakha is.
We're shocked that you asked.
Yes, for those that don't really care about Sephardi. The rest of the world, right?
We have here the Harry Kabler of this.
A quick
he
glance
wants
of.
What's the final?
A quick glance at the footnotes here didn't tell, but I didn't read carefully.
The Rosh, by the way, at the end. Mentions about it saying
it's not like Rabbi Akiva,
right? But I'm not. I'm just in my own head, kind of vaguely listening to what everybody else is saying. But I mean, not. Okay. But anyway, the Rosh says the reason that it is textual and not conceptual is because they started at the same time.
We
I understand that, but that's the precursor to the next part that I was going to say, which suggests then that if one started it, then we could say that we go to the conceptual understanding.
No, right. The Rosh says if one started it,
he justifies the fact that we understand it textually because they started at the same time. So that implies then that if one started it over the other, then we would go conceptually, not textually.
It doesn't, no.
Why?
Because if one started it, then the Rosh holds that the one who started it has to pay all the damage, and the other is not responsible at all.
Anything.
This is only when
that
we
makes
don't
sense.
Know
actually,
start.
The Tom does not take all of his damage in the first case because he does get 10 from the Moad, so he reduces the 40 by 10 on the up here.
Right, so like, the person who started like, it, it's
or well, like up here, where the Tom does not bear the 440 in this case. In one case, he gets. Reduces it.
Well, somebody's got to pay some shekels.
Pay 60, and so he's actually better off.
No, it's my cell phone, my credit card,
the Moad has to pay 60.
Everything.
Then the Tom is better off.
Because somebody's got to tell the poor schmuck what he's got to pay.
But all of this,
and
when we know who started it, it changes everything.
And his owner is paying 60.
That's going to change everything. We don't care about all this.
This is a case where the kids.
$40
Yeah, right.
But he lost $100
over there. This is about cost. That's right. I'm not with you again. Yeah, this is about cost. And so.
Good night, everybody.
And he pays.
No class next week.
So he still pays his toll. He still bears his toll cost.
He
doesn't cover you, but he bears his toll cost.
Yes, that's the way to say it.
Yeah, it's full damage.
Wednesday morning.
Okay.
Have a good trip.
Thank you. Right. See you on Friday morning.
Friday morning.
I won't see you. Won't see you on Friday morning.
So the next time we see you is
in this group. You mean?
Yeah. Oh no, Tuesday morning. Next week there's no Tuesday. There's no okay. So the next time
I'm coming back Wednesday night.
Which one?
I'm coming back Wednesday night. The next time you'll see me.
So a week on
Friday. You'll see me is Friday morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
Complicated stuff here.
Don't forget to sing.
That's right.
No, Ilan, I'm actually afraid to sing without you because if I get it wrong, I won't know.
What are you singing?
Don't be afraid to sing. That's the wrong approach.
Okay.
It's an open-ended process.
She's teaching me to sing. Do re mi. Did I get it right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Oh, I forgot to turn this off.
Oh, that's all.